DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Carrie Weber, who is a Mercy Associate and Managing Editor of America Magazine. She's an alumni of the Mercy Volunteer Corps and of the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. With Carrie Weber, we go inside the pages of Mercy in the City, How to Feed the Hungry, Give Drink to the Thirsty, Visit the Imprisoned, and Keep Your Day Job, published by Loyola Press. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Mercy in the City is an absolutely phenomenal book. It's funny, it's joy-filled, but it's also very challenging. That's a hard balance between all those different elements. How did you do it?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate those kind words. Well, I think that's sort of part of the Lenten process, part of the Christian experience, is this combination of joy and challenge. And so trying to keep that at the core was really important to me, both, you know, going through the process of trying to do these works of mercy, going through Lent, going through challenges, but also realizing the joy that comes from that and the joy that comes from being challenged. So as I was writing the book, I really took the time after I did sort of each work to try to sit down and write down exactly what I was thinking at the time, because I didn't want to have to try to remember it all at the end, you know, and I didn't want to look back with sort of rose-colored glasses at my experiences and say, oh yes, I remember being so moved by this, and forget about that challenging element. So I wanted to make sure I captured those frustrations and those moments of surprising joy as well as I went through the process.
You're just an ordinary person. You're just a real person who, it wasn't like you were sitting around praying in the cloister thinking, how can I enter into the corporal works of mercy? It didn't start out that way for you, did it?
No, yeah, well, yeah, I appreciate the fact that I am ordinary. I think one priest described me as bumbling, so, you know, maybe even subpar. But I have, when I was writing an article for America Magazine about chaplain at San Quentin State Prison who was teaching theology classes to the inmates there, as I was sort of researching this topic, I was Googling incarceration, Catholicism, etc., and up pops, you know, the works of mercy, of which visiting the imprisoned is one. And as I was looking over this list, I realized that although I had it memorized maybe from grade school religion classes, I had not actually been doing a lot of these works, and that it was, a lot of them had gotten away from me, that it was easy to sort of think that I had done them because a lot of them seemed so simple. So, and you want to think of yourself as, oh yeah, of course I do things for the poor. Of course I care for people in need. And I think it's it was really a wake up call for me to say, do I do them in this way? And if I don't, why not? And if I don't, how can I do that more? Because there are things that we are called by the Gospels to do, and there are so many ways to say yes to that. There are so many ways to say yes to that gospel call. It's really encouraging, and this is sort of the way I tried to do it.
It started out as a journey in your head. There was an intellectual prompting to go and discover something. And yet it seemed at some point during each work, each intellectual start ended up making it to the heart. I mean, there was this journey that would happen. And you are constantly chronicling the unexpected.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, I think it really made real to me the God of surprises, you know, God as surprising us all the time in so many ways. And I think that being open to that, being open to those surprises is a really important part of the process, because it's really easy to think, this is exactly how this is going to go. I'm going to go to the soup kitchen and I'm going to give somebody a sandwich and then they are going to be grateful and I'm going to feel good. And it's easy to think that it's going to just sort of work out that way once we start on this process. But it doesn't always work out that way. Sometimes people aren't grateful. Sometimes you're not very friendly. Sometimes, you know, there's all sorts of things that can kind of get in the way of the way we think things are going to go, but also sort of build toward that greater good, the way that any interaction with people sort of calls us out of ourselves and calls us to see maybe ourselves in others and maybe see and hopefully see Christ in others. So it's really about that human interaction, which makes things unpredictable, but also really wonderful.
I love the way that you said he's the God of surprises, in that we have the end result in mind. We think we know what we're going and we're going to go do. It's something that we initiate. And yet constantly throughout this journey of yours, it's the unexpected responses from others. It's almost as though they're doing something to you.
Yes. I think, you know, I probably got from others far more than I was able to sort of accomplish in terms of my actual work throughout this process. Just to learn more about myself, to learn more about what it means to be part of a community, to learn more about seeing Christ in others was really sort of crucial to this. And it was all sort of by people who, when I sort of entered into this process, were kind to me, were merciful toward me, were forgiving of the times that I sort of made mistakes or screwed up. And I think a lot of times we think that we have to do these works of mercy perfectly, or we shouldn't do them at all, that we're going to enter into this process, and if we can't do it the exact way we think we're going to do, then why bother? And so we don't start. But I think that we have to realize, as human beings, we're always going to do things slightly imperfectly, and that's okay. And that offers us chances to learn. It offers us chances to be, to have people show us compassion. And, you know, I went to overnight homeless shelter where I volunteered, and I when I got to the door, I think I had really, was the first time I really thought about, oh, I'm going to be in this kind of strange church basement with 20 men that I've never met. And it seems sort of strange, and I'm not really sure how I feel about it. And it's kind of more their home than mine. You know, as the volunteers helped keep it open, but these guys stay there almost every night. So I almost felt more like their guest than like I was sort of sheltering the homeless. And they could not have been more welcoming. And they had sat down, had great conversations with me. We found commonalities in our lives. And by the end, I felt welcomed. And I felt, you know, I did feel sort of still like I was their guest, but I was their welcome guest. And it was a humbling and profound kind of interaction.
Yeah, and so as you extended mercy, mercy was extended back to you. It's so, when you think of the heart of the Trinity, it's love responding to love.
Exactly, exactly. And I think mercy, I mean, I think we think of mercy as sort of a one-time thing. As we give mercy, we show mercy, we have mercy. It's sort of something that gets passed from one person to another, or even bestowed upon someone in kind of a grand gesture. But it's really more of a quiet, humble accompanying, I think. It's more of opening ourselves up and allowing for the love of another person to enter into your heart.
Yeah, I think that there's that moment, too, when that whole section on clothing the naked. Okay, that's one of the corporal works of mercy. And that exercise, we have a point where we want to clean out our closet just because we want to make room for more things.
Right, exactly.
And you did something that was different, which my family now, we did exactly what you did. And we ended up having the same result of going back again. But go ahead and describe that. I can't do it as well as you.
Sure, no. Well, I decided, you know, I was going to donate some clothes, and I was trying to think of how many clothes I could donate, or I should donate, or I would want to donate. And I thought, all right, well, maybe I'll come up with like a number of items, some kind of biblically significant number or something. And then I thought, no, all of those numbers seem too high. I'm just going to go through, clean it out, see what happens. And I got rid of some things and put them in a bag and felt good about myself. And then I went to the Catholic Worker Clothing Room, which on Tuesdays allows women to come in and bring a bag and just take whatever they need. And they kind of rotate in and out. And I went and I worked at that clothing room, and I saw, you know, women picking up clothes for their grandchildren. I had people looking for business attire to wear to work or job interviews, people looking for jackets, pillows, and it was just both the humility and the humanity of the women in that room really struck me. And, you know, just to chat with people and to sort of see their shopping experience as compared to mine. And I went home and I looked at my closet and I thought, all right, if any of these women needed one of these items of clothing in my closet, you know, would I give this to them? Do I need this, or maybe do they need it more? And I think when you put a face on something, when you think, all right, I'm going to give these clothes to quote unquote the poor, you think, it's sort of this abstract entity. And when you think of, you know, does Sally need this jacket more than I do? It's a different question. You see people, and you think, all right, let's try to think about this in terms of humanity, in terms of human beings. So then I was able to clear out quite a few more items of clothing, and I actually ended up recruiting my friends to donate clothing as well, and we brought down like 12 trash bags filled with clothing. And just the simple act of being able to connect more people to the Catholic Worker House, and through asking other friends, you know, it sort of, the circles of mercy just kept extending, and it was a really interesting part of the process for me.
Yeah, I love how you just said, when you put the face on it. The minute you said that, I thought of that moment at the Mass where we say, show us the light of your face, Christ, Jesus. We want to see the light of your face. And that's, I think, when you saw those women doing that in a very real way, was it not, Carrie, that was Christ who you were clothing?
Yes. I mean, this is something that I encountered over and over and over again, I think, as I was going through the process, was sort of this continual seeing of Christ in other people in a very real way. And I think it's different even in that process than sort of this abstract idea of seeing Christ in people. There's a sense of, you know, of course, we're supposed to see Christ in people, but when you see Christ in individuals, I think it even makes a difference, you know, like kind of, again, put a face on that face of Christ. Because I think a lot of times, you know, like when I was working in a bread line to try to feed the hungry, there were a lot of people, there were people that had come in off the street. And I think I had tended to see people who were homeless as sort of either Christ-like in an almost idealized way, as in a sort of like otherworldly figure almost, or crazy, you know, one or the other. There was an extreme there. And to also just see them as people with, who were sometimes crabby and sometimes joyful and sometimes grateful and sometimes happy, just like me, was again, very humbling.
It seems as though, especially as I was reading it through your eyes, it was almost like a living lectio. It really was, because it's that Matthew 25, when did I see you hungry? When did I see you naked? When did I see you imprisoned and did something? And right. And I think that's you, you know, in Lectio Divina, we talk about taking the scriptures and we put ourselves in the scene. You in a very real, living way, you put yourself in the scene.
That's a really great connection. Sorry, I didn't follow.
And the encouragement for us to do that, because the fruits for you have been extraordinary, haven't they?
You know, it really has, because I think in the end of this, it, you know, it's not, the works of mercy are not a checklist. We don't go through and we say, okay, yep, fed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, visited the imprisoned, done. I am now more merciful. You know, it's a process, and it's a beginning of something, but it's really meant to put us in a kind of mindset of mercy. And that meaning we see opportunities for mercy more often. We see small things in our everyday life as examples of mercy. I think a lot of times we think mercy and the works of mercy have to be done for a kind of stranger and other. We don't recognize the times we do already do those for people in our family or our friends. You know, a new mother caring for an infant child and taking care of all those very corporal needs, those are works of mercy. And I think we need to not be afraid to recognize that and elevate those acts. Because when we do, it leaves us open to recognizing more acts and to being compelled to act in maybe broader ways as well.
Yeah, I think that's how it becomes something rather than something that we do for others. It becomes that gift of sharing, and in that, as you've described it so wonderfully in Mercy in the City, you begin to have that 24/7 prayer that Paul talks about, in which you're always aware of the presence of Christ.
It is. And you know, and sometimes that's scary, and because it's a challenge, and it means things have to change. You know, if you start seeing Christ in people all the time, then you have to treat them as though, you know, you see that. You have to change your ways sometimes. You can't just walk by someone anymore who's sitting on the street. You maybe, even if you don't have any food or money to give them, or you have to look them in the eye. You know, you have to try to recognize their humanity in some way, or say a prayer for them. You know, it's this process of change and of a journey, and it's continual. And we're never going to kind of perfect it, but we can't let that keep us from working at it.
That whole section on and not thrusting water at others, I think it is probably one of the best meditations through a lived experience on the new evangelization that we could have to initiate that conversation. I think it's a wonderful role model. Do you mind breaking that open a little bit to kind of give folks the idea of what I'm talking about?
Sure. No, thank you very much. I think to give drink to the thirsty, I went to the New York City Half Marathon and passed out water at the what they were calling fluid stations, which were really just folding tables with cups of water on them. And we had to get there, you know, quite early, and we filled hundreds of cups of water. The water came from these weird trash cans filled with plastic bags, which were filled via the fire hydrants, which I found interesting. But so we filled all the cups, and when the runners came by, we were instructed, do not thrust these cups at the runners, as though we were going to sort of chase down the marathon or the half marathon leaders and push this cup into their hand. And, you know, they said, just leave them on the edge of the table. And if they want them, go grab them. Just keep moving the cups forward so that they're within reach. And I realized after the fact that I had not actually really handed anybody a cup of water. And so, you know, I kind of was thinking, maybe do I have to actually, you know, how literal do I have to be here? Do I have to hand them the cup of water to say that I have given drink to the thirsty? But at the same time, I was going through the RCIA program as a sponsor, sponsoring a young woman. And it kind of made me think of that process as I was standing there by the table of how we need to make these spiritual things that quench people's thirst, these resources, the best parts of the church, and we need to do our best to be ready for that, to present that. But in the end, you can't run someone down and thrust this waters of life into their hand. You can't force someone to sit down and read the Bible or go to Mass. You make these things available to people. You offer invitations and maybe move it a little bit closer to them and let them come and let them choose and let them accept that invitation. And that parallel just really struck me as I was going through this process.
One of the more challenging chapters, you're going to the prison, and the chaplain that you are having the conversation is helping you to remind you that these are still human beings, and that some of them are, especially the ones on death row, that the crimes they committed were horrible. They're a human person who committed murder. They're not a murderer. Not to define them by their act.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think, and that's one of the things that it took me by surprise, although I wish I wasn't surprised by it, but going to the prison and finding humanity and finding people who were in prison, not prisoners, not murderers, not criminals, but people who had done really horrible things in some cases, but who in many cases were also trying to turn around their lives and trying to make up for some of the things they had done and trying to improve, and the challenges to that and stigmas that come with that. And, and the reminder that they are also in the body of Christ. Because we don't see people, or because they've done something that they're not proud of, doesn't mean that they get excluded from this community. And and it's up to us to be sure that they are included and make sure that, that people are not forgotten. Because, the chaplain also pointed out that sometimes certain circumstances can make a huge influence on somebody's life. And, you know, who knows what would have happened had my life been slightly different. You know, you never... The line between their lives and mine was a lot thinner than I imagined when I went in there.
Yeah, it's so compelling when you think about it, because it's challenging to all of us. But then again, this is what it is to have with that Galatians 2:20. It's not I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And so what did he do? He got accused of having and sharing meals with prostitutes, with sinners. He reached out to them in love and looked at them as the person that they are. He still responded to them in relationship with acts of love, even those who would ultimately betray him.
Right, you know, exactly.
And that's, I think, that in what you've done in these quote-unquote works of mercy, it's that it's working out our salvation in fear and trembling, isn't it, Carrie?
Right, exactly. It's just this continual process of kind of refining of all that work that all of us need to do. And we can be reminded of that by in surprising places and by surprising people. And we can help each other along that way. It's not something that we have to do alone, which is the really wonderful part of it, is that thankfully our church and our communities give us just that community, that sense of community that help us to move forward, that help us to be refreshed, that hold us accountable, that keep us encouraged and help us to keep moving forward and keep trying to better ourselves and the world and the church. And I think a lot of times our communities help to recognize in us things we might not recognize in ourselves. Even the prison chaplain at San Quentin, I spoke with him. I've been in touch with him since I traveled there for my book, and I spoke with him about a reporting trip I took this fall to Rwanda, where I reported on the reconciliation there since the 1994 genocide. Mm-hmm. And as I was telling him about this and the forgiveness that had taken place and the challenges to that, he said, "Oh, you know, we have a restorative justice group at San Quentin. If you have time, why don't you come back and talk at San Quentin to some of the guys there?" And so just a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to go back and speak with about 80 men about reconciliation and restorative justice in Rwanda. And I didn't know how it would be received. I didn't know what it would be like to talk about genocide and murder in a room where many men had committed murder, you know, and how do you talk about and what will the reactions be? And they were so inviting and so kind and so welcoming and so engaged. And, you know, one man stood up and said, "You know, the conflicts in Rwanda remind me, and between the tribes there sort of remind me of the conflicts between the Crips and the Bloods. And I was in the Crips when I was in L.A. And, you know, these were insights that I had never, connections I would never have made and insights I could never have thought of. But that had a real profundity and that were really meaningful for the men and meaningful for me to hear." So it sort of broadened that circle of mercy again. Is you know, once you start doing one thing, people start to call you back in. They see things in you that I would never have come up with this idea to go there. And it's a wonderful way to kind of get that process going.
We're talking again with Carrie Weber about mercy in the city, how to feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, visit the imprisoned, and keep your day job. And Carrie, I wish we had more time. I mean, the gravedigger story is priceless. There is gem after gem after joyful gem. As you just related, going back to San Quentin and sharing and meeting with the prisoners once again and being surprised, were there any other moments that in this experience that stay with you today very, very strongly? I mean, that just keep coming back to you over and over again.
Yeah, I think, well, for one, I think it was that visit to the prison has stuck with me quite a bit. But also working at the Breadline at St. Francis Church here in Manhattan at 7 a.m., where the way it works is we went and there was a cart with sandwiches on it, and we kind of push the cart forward through these two lines and hand sandwiches out on either side. And this sort of sense of being sort of in the midst of and surrounded by humanity and kind of part of this sort of ragtag, strange community that forms for a little while, and then sandwiches are given away, and then it kind of disappears. But for a moment, there's these strange connections, and that kind of sticks with you. It sticks with me. It would stick with me all day, and I still think about it. And the connections that you can make in just a minute when you're open to that, and when you're make yourself available to it. And I try to continue to do that as best as I can.
Any final thoughts, Carrie, as you close this conversation?
Well, I think we just need to keep in mind the need to be a part of a community, to not be too hard on ourselves, and to realize that it's a continual process, that, you know, sweeping the floor, I guess, where, you know, you do it, you don't necessarily do it every day, but you do it every once in a while and make sure everything kind of stays clean, stays ready, and you're kind of just aware of the need to keep preparing. I think everyone is really able to be a part of these works of mercy, that we shouldn't allow ourselves to think like, oh, I'm not able to do these because this or that, or I'm too busy. We need to recognize we already do, and to recognize the thing we can do, because when we look at sort of systemic injustice in the world, the first step to changing that, I think, is looking at people and saying, we do this, we need systemic change on behalf of these individuals, you know, not on behalf of kind of an abstract entity or abstract sense of injustice, that that recognizing that one leads to the other.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Carrie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
With Carrie Weber, we've gone inside the pages of Mercy in the City, How to Feed the Hungry, Give Drink to the Thirsty, Visit the Imprisoned, and Keep Your Day Job. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to LoyolaPress.com, the website for its publisher, Loyola Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this episode along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.